Thank you, Tom. We will begin with the questions. And would people stand at the microphone? I will recognize this is microphone one, this is microphone two, in the rear is microphone three, and in the far rear is microphone four. So I will, if you would please, I will recognize the person standing at the microphone for the first question. And we will start with microphone three in the rear. Microphone three, please. Please state your name.
Yes, Gloria Farah from Maryland. My question is for both candidates. I've been working on RPAC intimately for over 25 years. I would like to know your history of giving and also what you might be thinking about doing to get more of our membership to be participants. Thank you.
Who would like to start? Tom?
As I mentioned, when I was 18 years old, my dad brought me to a luncheon. And back in those days, I thought I was in church. They used to pass a basket around. And ironically, the lady in the front, I used to tease, and I apologize, ladies, but she had a bouffant hairdo. And she started preaching about this thing called RPAC. They had a raffle. Many of you have heard this story. I won the raffle. My dad made me put the money back into the basket. I didn't like RPAC. I had to give up a lot of money. And on the way home in the car, my dad explained to me what RPAC was. And it was a no-brainer for an 18-year-old kid. You protected your industry and your livelihood. So that was 1974. And I got my introduction to RPAC. I've given money to RPAC every single year since. And I will say that I learned it the way I wish we still taught it. I never worried about recognition. I didn't think it was about recognition. And as much as I believe in RPAC, and I had a wonderful experience last year with my realtor party going around the country explaining what RPAC was all about, I'm not so sure that we've gone in the right direction over the years. It's more about what color your pin is. It's more about which cocktail party you get to go to. So I think from an RPAC standpoint, it's something that we need to get back to the basics of what it's all about and why we give. Thank you.
Thank you, Tom. Jim?
Thank you. I can't see where you're at, Gloria, but thank you for the question. You know, for those of you who may not know this, I'm a third-generation realtor. In my very first commission, my father walked in with my commission check, the first transaction I did, and he said, I need a check from you for $99. I said, what for? And he said, give me the check and I'll tell you. That was in 1975, my first year in business. So I gave him a check for $99, and he told me what RPAC was about. And since 1975, I've given to RPAC every year. I'm an 8-time Golden R, a 7-time President's Circle person. I'm in NAR's Hall of Fame for RPAC. I was proudly inducted in 2009 into NAR's Hall of Fame. But I have a different take on RPAC than some people do. We've spent a lot of time talking about President's Circle, Golden R's, Crystal R's, Sterling R's, Silver R's, you name it. I have a different take on RPAC, and I was major investor liaison in 2009 for our association. But here's what I think. I think we need to get to the people who will give $15 or $25. I worry less about the large investors. And by the way, investing in RPAC was a word I termed in 2011. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. The floor recognizes microphone one.
Thank you. Gary Rogers from Boston, Massachusetts. I've been in real estate 26 years. We've all gone through good times and bad. And the one thing I look for is leadership. I happen to be a military veteran. I understand leadership. I'll follow my leaders anywhere. To both of you, I'd like to know what the single most important trait you believe you bring to the table in serving as my president.
Who would like to go first? All right. Jim?
Thank you for the question. It's Wow. Hope that was a yes vote. I guess what I would say the most important, there's two things I think about when I think about leadership. Getting people involved who are willing to, who understand where your position is, but not taking such a strong position that you can't hear what they have to say, number one. And number two, I think a leadership role is you have to find people who are going to follow you. It is absolutely essential that we find people who are willing to take up the cause of your association you're involved in when your leadership role ends. I will tell you, I see sitting right here in front of me, Mike Pion, my local board president. Thank you for being here, Mike. I got Mike with one other person involved several years ago because he was young, he understood what realtor is, and he went in the direction of becoming a leader, and he's my local board president. Thank you for doing that, Mike, on our behalf of my local association.
Tom?
I would say it's one word. It's inclusiveness. And I think one of the things that I've realized over the last 4 or 5 years, we contradict ourselves a little bit in the association, if we're going to be really honest. I've had the opportunity to go around the country, and I have sat in rooms like this, listened to people at podiums who were incredible, incredible. I've sat in their board of directors meeting, their executive committees, listened to people who were incredible. And after the meeting, I've gone up to the person and said, "You're great. You're absolutely great. What do you do at NAR?" And they shake their head. "I gave up." "You gave up? Well, you know, I put my name down for a committee 2 years in a row, and I never got picked. And then I was told, you don't do it that way. You got to put down your name for 3 different things because you can't expect to just get the one you want." I did that 3 years in a row, and I never got picked. I gave up. Now, where I say contradictory, I have sat in rooms for 35 years, and I've heard us all say, we need to be more inclusive. We need to get more members involved. Now, what's wrong with that picture? I sit here and I say we need to get more people involved, and we are going to go out and find more people. These are people who are asking to get involved, and we're not getting them involved. And when you look at those lists of those committees that those people signed up for, you will find names who have been on those committees for 10 and 11 years. You know, all of us like to stay around. But after we do our job, if you're going to be a great leader, you're a mentor first. So once you've done your job, you need to move aside, and we need to get some of these people who want to be involved, involved in our association. And that's my intent.
The floor recognizes microphone 4, or over there in the rear.
My name's Nick D'Ambrosio. I'm from Maryland. And my question is, it pretty much piggybacks on what was just said, and I'd like to ask it specifically of Tom. I happened to be eavesdropping on a conversation that he was in that I wasn't involved in, and I heard him talking about visiting, how he's very proud that how he went around, visited states, met with the members in their home states, and how rewarding that was. And then I couldn't hear anymore. So I'd kind of like to know, what'd you really learn from those visits besides the people who became disillusioned?
Now, is this question for one candidate?
This is just for Tom, yes.
Just a question for Tom?
Yes.
Yes.
You got me nervous, Nick, when you said it was a private situation. My fiance's sitting over here. You got me really nervous. I'll tell you what the end of that conversation was. It was about inclusiveness again, and I said that if we really, really want to accomplish that, it's going to take a ton of work. Because the most productive meetings I've had in the last 4 or 5 years have been in brokers' offices in different states. Brokers have been nice enough when I go to a state to literally call an office meeting so I can address agents on the street like us. And I will tell you the excitement when they think that somebody from NAR has actually come to their office. It's overwhelming. I've never left one of those meetings where I didn't get some emails or texts or handwritten notes asking, how do I get involved? So I think that if we're truly, truly going to get the grassroots members involved, we have got to go to their offices. When we go to a state and we talk to the people who've come to us like this, you're the proverbial choir. You're going to come. You're coming to hear us speak. We've got to go to the people on the street and talk to them and really get them involved. Because I will tell you, this organization has some incredible people who want to be involved. Thank you for the question.
The floor recognizes microphone 2.
Mr. Moderator, my question is for Tom also, so I will be glad to yield to the next question.
Excuse me, Jim. I didn't. Your question is for whom?
For Tom.
Okay.
Is that okay?
You may.
Tom.
Wait, just a second.
I believe you had wanted the questions to go back and
yes,
forth.
Yes, that's correct.
The last one was Tom,
okay,
so I will yield.
Excuse me. Microphone 1. Question is for whom?
This question is for both candidates.
Both candidates.
My name is Pat Fitzgerald from Florida. What do you both see as the single biggest challenge that NAR has today?
Who would like to go first?
I'll go first.
All right.
Thanks for the question. There's really two in my mind that come to mind right away. The first one is NAR has done a horrible job in my mind of what I will say is connecting to the members back at home. We can communicate with them, and I've said for years we communicate horribly, but I stopped using the word communicate about 2 years ago, and I used the word connect. And I do that because when I communicate, it's not a dialogue. It may be a monologue. We need to talk to the individual members. I want to hear what you tell us we need to change, and then let us go back to the table and try and use those things to help NAR be better. So if you say to me, what are we doing really badly? And by the way, I assume you meant aside from this election process. So I would say to you that Our inability over the last many years to connect with a local member, the people on the street who really tell us what is in their heads and hearts and what we need to do for them.
Tom?
Without trying to be overly melodramatic, it's our existence. Our existence as we are today is being threatened by multiple channels, and I think our number one concern over the next decade is our existence.
Chair recognizes microphone 1.
Jean Crosby, Illinois. This is for Tom. Last year, I was able to be a recipient for Hall of Fame. And I took great pride in that. And this year, I was privileged enough to be selected to serve on RPAC fundraising. My question to you, sir, is, in light of your prior comments, do you believe that the RPAC levels should be diminished?
What?
Diminished, because your comment was we've gotten a wrong focus.
I don't think they should be diminished. I think that what my comment was that we're not explaining properly why we give to RPAC. In other words, when we have a situation where you walk in a room or you walk down a hallway, and because somebody's capable of writing a check for $5,000, that individual can go to the right and get better alcohol than the single mom who struggled to write a check for $99, and we say to her, oh, I'm sorry, you got to go over here. I just think that there's too much of, if you give this much, you get to go on a trip. If you give this much, you get a different color pin. It's not what RPAC's about. It's about protecting our industry. It's about protecting our livelihoods. I think our presentation, I don't care what kind of levels we have, it's our presentation of the purpose of RPAC that I'm concerned about.
So.
The board recognizes microphone 3.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I've been privileged over the years to earn a number of designations that NAR and its societies and councils have distributed. I'd like to know from both candidates what your thoughts are on designations in education, both required and self-imposed.
Who'd like to go first?
I'll be happy to. I think designations in education are one of the most important things in our organization. I think that I have been incredibly blessed. Our organization has 95% of all of you sitting in this room and of all our membership in the country enter this industry as a second, third, or fourth career. So our educational opportunities at any level, local, state, national, Women's Council, you go on and on, are so important for our members, and I'm grateful that we have it. So that means 5%, only 5%, 5 out of every 100 people enter this industry as a first-time career. Out of that, less than one-half of 1%, less than one-half of 1% enter this industry with any educational background in the industry before he or she gets in the industry. Why I say I was so blessed? It sounds kind of crazy, but at 10 years old, when my dad brought me into that office, he was enrolled that year. For those of you who've been around a long time, the number one guru in education was a person named Earl Nightingale. I was the youngest person to ever attend an Earl Nightingale class. At 10 years old, I sat in the class. I didn't know much of what they were talking about, but I was impressed by the way everybody was dressed. I thought it was so cool that people had ties and jackets on, and I said to my dad, wow, this is unbelievable. He said, that's because we're a profession. And people dress this way when they're professional. By the time I was 17 years old, I had already been through two more educational training classes with a gentleman by the name of Tom Hopkins. One was 1 week, one was 2 weeks. When I went to college, I had already obtained my real estate license in the state of New Jersey. I went to college in Pennsylvania. I majored in business management, and I minored in real estate. Took every real estate class there was in that college and got my second license at 19 years old in the great state of Pennsylvania. I graduated college, and when I got back home, my dad had a book on the desk, on my desk. It was called the National Association of Independent Fee Appraisers. It was based out of St. Louis, Missouri. And the book was about this thick, and my dad had already enrolled me in the test, not the course. He said, I just spent a lot of money putting you through college. You should be able to pass a test. So by the time I was 22 years old, I had the designation of the National Association of Independent Fee Appraisers. I then got, the following year, I got my... What is the time?
We didn't restrict the candidates from the time, but so Tom, can you kind of wrap it up a bit?
The bottom line is, by the time I had gotten into the industry, I had taken probably about 22 courses and taught about 15 myself. So I think education is extremely important.
Jim.
Thank you. Well, I obviously believe in designations. I've got 6 or 7 of the National Association of Realtors designations. I will tell you, the designations in my mind are a visible symbol of the education I've taken. They show our clients and our customers who often want a CCIM or an SIOR or a CRB or a CRE to work for them because they realize how deep that education is. You know, back in the 80s, I wrote a book called Modern Real Estate Practice in Pennsylvania. That book is used as the prime book in Pennsylvania to teach new agents how to become realtors. That book is still being used today. I guess my concern is one, and Harold, I appreciate the question. Thank you. Two out of three NAR directors believe in designations. I obviously believe in designations, or I wouldn't do that. I also still teach, by the way, the orientation program at my local association because I believe in education from the get-go. I was a college graduate. I had a business or administration degree. But I went into real estate, and I went into real estate courses that the realtors said are the important courses you need to understand, take, and pass in order to be a better realtor, in order to be a better person for your clients and customers. That's why I have six or seven designations, including At Home with Diversity. I taught GRI for 20 years, so we got young people who are just getting into the business to understand the difference between a course that somebody will give you versus a course that realtors believe is good for realtors. That's my belief in education. That's my belief in designations. If you look at my website, you will see designations mean a lot to me, not just because they earn me more money, but because they tell our clients and customers, I believe that what we need to do is understand your needs as a client and customer, and that's the direction I went in. Thank you very much.
The floor recognizes microphone two.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My name is Brenda Gabbati from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and my question is to Tom. Tom, the word grassroots has been throughout your campaign over and over and over. My question is, as you've traveled all over the country and you've met with so many of our grassroots members, what is the strongest lesson you have learned that will help you be the president that you aspire to be?
I would probably repeat the answer that I gave on the other question. The abilities that our members have is just, they're unbelievable. And we have got to do a better job of getting them included, not just in committees. It doesn't matter what it is. I don't care if it's a committee or PAG. My belief when it comes to committees, just as an aside, if we have a committee that we historically have 20 people on, and there's no financial ramification because that committee only meets here at these meetings and in the November meeting, and increasing the size of that committee means just bringing in more chairs. Bring in more chairs. Have a bigger committee if you have to. Now, of course, if it's a committee that meets off-site, well, then that's different because now you're going to have a financial ramification. But I see absolutely no reason, if getting more people involved means to make some committees a little bit larger, I would be all for that. Thank you.
Floor recognizes microphone one.
Thank you, Nestor. Ned Ward from Region 2. I am probably the granddad here. I am finishing my 53rd year in real estate. And I am also a retired fighter pilot for the Navy, and so I think I've been around a little bit. Anyway, Jim, I would like to ask you, what have you learned over the years that will make you a good NAR president with your involvements in leadership team member, NAR treasurer, liaison to NAR committees, chairman of many NAR committees, and subsidiary board appointment by the leadership team?
I want to make it clear I did not ask that question. Thanks, Ned, for asking. I learned a lot of things, but one of the things I learned the most is that experience is what you get right after you need it.
Should I leave?
I also learned experience is the best teacher I've ever had. I've spent some time, you're right, on the leadership team. I learned to listen. People ask me, and I will go back to the third year I was treasurer of the National Association, and I was in the nominating committee, and the nominating committee asked me the question, what have you learned? You've been here 2 years. And I said, I learned to listen. And what I learned to do when I say that was I learned to listen to members all the time. You know, we've talked a little bit here today about committees and inclusiveness. I've never once sat in an NAR meeting in 25 years I've been coming here where a chairman, unless it was a closed meeting, didn't say, come in, sit down, and listen to the comments of a member. I have no problem with increasing the size of a committee, but I will tell you that in some cases, to the point, there is no more room on the physical committee. But I've never seen a committee chair say, we don't want to hear what you have to say. Please sit down. You have to leave the room unless it's been a closed committee, which is a closed committee, which is an issue that NAR sets, not me. The other thing I learned, frankly, as a member of the leadership team and on all the committees and PAGs, and I've served on over 50 committees, PAGs, task forces, service groups, Dick Gaylord, Charles McMillan, Vicky Cox-Golder all appointed me to a number of things, including some global things. I will tell you that the thing I learned, other than to listen, is that we have members out there who understand as well or better than what we as leaders sometimes think we understand. And it's time that we started not listening just to the people who we like what we hear, but also we need to listen to our critics. Because our critics sometimes have a point of view that if we don't hear, and by hear I don't mean hear with our ear, but embrace and understand why they're saying that, we are missing an opportunity that may well serve our association well. So I would say, please learn to listen. Please learn to embrace, not just listening and hearing, but understanding. Thank you.
Floor recognizes microphone 4.
Yes, hello. Good afternoon to both candidates. My name is Rob Maida from Minneapolis, Minnesota, and I am a YPN member, in case you couldn't tell. So I've got a question for both candidates. It's kind of a two-part question. One is, what interactions have you had with our YPN members? And then the second part is, how would you integrate the YPNers into getting more involved at NAR?
I don't care.
You know, it's interesting. I told somebody the other day, every once in a while, you make a really stupid decision in life. And I said I should have patented that phrase. In 2003, I had the honor of being president of Florida. And because I had been, in the real estate business as a full-time agent at 22 years old, I knew what it was like for a young person to get involved. So at that time, I said, you know, we should start a young group in Florida. Dean Asher in the room? And so I went to a young guy, and I said, we're going to start a young group. I don't know what it's going to be like and how it's going to go forward, but I want to start this group, and I want you to chair it. You're the perfect person. You're young. You're energetic. We're going to do great. And we have two meetings a year in Florida. One's in January, one's in either August or September. So the January meeting comes around, and Dean chairs the meeting, and there were 11 people. Dean was not real happy. He was a little bit depressed. He said, this is never going to work. I said, Dean, it's going to work. Give it some time. The second meeting we had 44 people. We had 44 people. And 3 years later, NAR coined the phrase YPN, and I was an idiot because I should have patented it. But that young man is now the president of the Florida Association of Realtors. So I don't know if you'll ever find anybody who will incorporate youth like I will. Now, I will say one thing, though. Youth, new ideas, does not necessarily mean age. To me, you could be 70 years old, be youthful, and have a great idea. So there's a blend. Thank you for the question.
Jim?
To this day, I'm still the youngest president of the Greater Harrisburg Association of Realtors has ever had. I was 29. I was the third youngest president of my state association to this day. The two younger people was my best friend, Thad Stevens at the time, and my father. They both beat me by less than 18 months. When I got into the business in 1975, and I'd worked in the company since I was 10 or 12. I remember when we went in and you did mimeograph machines, chunk, chunk, chunk. because we did a lot of things by mimeograph back then. And when I first got my license and I went out and I walked into people's homes and people's offices, they would say to me, "You know, I appreciate what you've told me, but you're a little bit too young. You don't have the experience that I need to do the transaction I expect to be done." Having said that, I will tell you, there are YPN people in this room. Adrian, I don't know if you're in the room. Where are you at? Adrian, you are. We've got Chris Beedling from Pennsylvania. Three or four people in my state who I've said, you need to get involved. I will always encourage that. I mentioned Mike Pion from my local association earlier. I will never do anything other than suggest that the YPNers are our future. If we don't listen to them, much like I talked about our critics a few moments ago, if we don't listen to what the YPN people say, because they are a different member, they are different than what we in our age group now is, and I think of myself as a YPNer before they knew they existed, if we don't listen to what those people say and understand how they do business differently than we've done it during our term as realtors, we are going to lose this association to people who no longer will exist. And that's a sad, sad place to be. We need to find a way to make sure that every person who is young gets involved in this association. They need a place to do that. And I will tell you, we have found a place for them. I spent Thursday. I spent Tuesday night at a YPN event downtown here in D.C. I love being with those people. My son, who is 26 years old, is a fourth-generation realtor. You think I don't want the YPNers to exist? You think I don't want my family to have a place to go down the road? That is so important to me. You will not find anyone more committed to making sure that the young people in our organization have a place to go. I want my son to succeed, and I want every other YPNer to succeed as well. If we don't find a way to embrace what they bring to the table, new, fresh ideas, different ways of doing business, all the things that go with that, we are missing an opportunity to, in some ways, save our association. So I would say that we need to work on that.